sermons on Power 92.
How about a TV news announcer?
Hi, this is Rod Majors from ABC 7, Chicago's number one news station.
Sportscaster.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Giangreco from ABC 7.
How about a TV traffic reporter?
Hi, this is ABC 7's Roz Varon.
A media salesperson.
Hi, I'm Lee Montgomery, accounts manager for Power 92.
Radio program director or music director.
Hi, this is Barbara McDowell, music director for Power 92.
How about a board operator or production assistant?
Hey, this is Manny Moore, production director for Power 92.
The new Kennedy King College at 63rd and Halsted offers training in these and other media communications courses. In just 2 short years, you can earn an associate in applied science degree in media communications that will set you up for good paying jobs and a career in the radio and TV communications industry. Call 773-602-5555. 773-602-5555. Registration is going on right now. Your future success starts at the new Kennedy King College.
We are Chicago's number one college radio station, 89.3 WKKC, HD1 Chicago.
The views and opinions expressed on WKKC are not those of WKKC or the City Colleges of Chicago.
WKKC, welcome into Baseline. I am Chris Bass. How you doing this Saturday morning? Well, not too shabby. I mean, you know, you're walking around. That's all right by me. What does Kevin Brown say? Any day above ground is a good day. It's a good day, mate. We'll take it. You can also email me, baseonair@gmail.com. That's B, as in broadcasting, ASEONAIR@gmail.com. Also go to Facebook.com and type in Chris Bass. That's C-H-R-I-S-B-A-S-E. Okay, I know I'm the 86 Chris Bass in there, but once again, brown guy with glasses, microphone from Chicago. That's it. No Manchester, England, no, you know, New Haven, Connecticut. I am black. Well, coffee and cream color, but that's besides the point. You know who I am. Also, we go to thebassstation.ning.com. It's a site that I just started. It's free. I know we're in tough economic time. I'm going to charge you anyway, but it's free. Start your own page, and it has an interactive chat room. So the chat room does get very lively at times. I do go in there most of the time because I have no life whatsoever. So you go in there, check in, and just be a part of the family. I also go to twitter.com, started Twittering. Yes, yes, don't look at me like that. I started Twittering, and that's all right, which is not too shabby. I just don't put in my address and where I live at and what I'm doing from time to time. That's when it gets stupid. I don't tell you I'm going to the bathroom. That's when it gets, like, outrageous for me. So, please. And these fine broadcasts are archived for all two of you listening when you go to chrisbass.podomatic.com. That's chrisbass.podomatic.com. This show will be archived later on. I really appreciate that. So let's get started. My guest I've admired for years. I've always felt that she was a champion even before her life changed, and just a really cool person. I want to bring to Baseline in studio with me Emmy Award-winning AIDS activist Ray Lewis Thornton. Ray, welcome to Baseline.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's early.
First of all, I thank you for coming in early.
You're welcome.
And I know it's early for most. Like I always say, if I was doing this show, I'd be calling hogs myself.
Ooh, good Lord.
Yes, sir. Please call Jesus, right?
Steven had to put some lipstick and earrings on this early.
Well, first of all, I wasn't good. I thank you for that.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Well, great. We'll get into the obvious later, but if I look at a couple of things, I want to talk to you real quick. Because we haven't heard from you in a while when it comes to, you know, certain issues and everything. Is anything would get off your chest, like the current Obama administration or anything that you want to talk about?
Oh, Jesus, you hit me with Obama this early. Well, you know, we have given our president a free ticket.
Okay.
And that's very dangerous. You know, I did politics 17 years before I became an AIDS activist these last 15 years. Because the economy is so bad does not mean we should give him a free ride. He has not mentioned the word AIDS out of his mouth or HIV out of his mouth. When 54% of all cases of HIV are African American, when 72% of all new cases of women are African American women, and the last time I heard his wife and daughters were African American females, 67% of all children infected with HIV are African American, and one in two black gay men are HIV infected. And so I'm waiting on him to say something about HIV/AIDS. When Senator Clinton was running for president, she said that if white women were disproportionately impacted the way black, if white women were the way black women were, there would be an outrageous outcry. I'm waiting on that outrageous outcry from our president.
Interesting. All right. Well, nothing wrong with that.
Sorry, people. I know we love him.
No,
he's our president.
No, but you know what?
He's our homeboy.
But yeah, but you're being honest, and I appreciate that because you know, we can't. And this is no offense to our current president.
No.
We have to. He has to be accountable.
He has to be held accountable.
Absolutely.
We elected him. He has to be held accountable. And we should not ask anything less of him that we would not ask of a white president.
Absolutely. Right.
Just
absolutely.
Saying something there.
Well, you know, like, for example, when he said change is coming to America.
I'm waiting.
And that goes across all boards.
Absolutely.
All fights, all anything.
Absolutely.
So when, for example, he was running for the presidency last year, when he said change, he meant within ourselves, and then we make the change outwardly.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that we, you know, African Americans, we've always been very politically astute. This running for office is no thing to us.
Right.
You know, we ran for president in 84 and 88 with Jesse Jackson. He got 8 million votes. Now, that's no small thing 25 years ago.
That's right.
We ran Harold Washington. We've registered people to vote. And so, you know, I want to say to African Americans, we should not be afraid to say to our president, you represent us too, and you represent our issues, whatever they may be.
Mm-hmm.
And AIDS is definitely one of our issues.
Describe your life before you was diagnosed.
Before I was diagnosed with HIV, I was a young political organizer. I started here in Chicago as an intern at Operation Push at 19. It was at the end of the Harold Washington, the beginning of the Harold Washington tenure. I organized 7 busloads of students from Carbondale, SIU, to come to Chicago to get the vote out for Harold Washington.
Oh, great.
Found out I had a gift and a talent and a passion for our people and our issues. And Jesse Jackson ran for president in 84, and I went on that campaign trail as a deputy national youth director, moved to Washington, D.C. In 88, I was the National Youth Director for the Jackson Campaign. I was the Senior Advance Coordinator for Carol Moseley Braun's first senatorial bid. And I've worked on historical races across the country. When Mike Espy ran for congressman and was the first black congressman elected to Mississippi since Reconstruction, I was in Mississippi working on his campaign. When Barbara Mikulski was the first female elected to Senate as a Democrat, I was in Maryland working on her campaign. And so people like Donna Brazile were my colleagues and my counterparts. And I was basically on my way to the White House. My last major job offer, right before I made a transition to AIDS, was to work for Clinton Gore on their campaign as a senior advance person. I knew I was infected with HIV at the time, and I knew that I couldn't keep up those kind of 13, 14, 15-hour day pace that politics require. And so it was probably the greatest loss from HIV has been my political career.
What year were you diagnosed with HIV?
I was diagnosed, let's understand the time frame of HIV. The first cases were 1981. We developed the HIV antibody test in 1985.
Okay.
So from 81 to 85, we didn't even know how to test for HIV.
Right.
In 85, they started testing. In the winter of 86, I donated blood. In fact, I organized a blood drive.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was a thank you letter was a letter telling me that something was wrong with the blood I donated. And I donated blood like in December 86. And March of 87, at 23, they told me I was HIV infected. I was in D.C. working in politics. I was working for the largest peace and disarmament organization in the country, organizing in the Southeast region for them. And it was the beginning of my next journey.
23 years old, I mean, that has to, of course, it's obviously devastating, but what was going through your mind at 23
and
you get this news?
You know, okay. People say, I don't get it. I actually went back to work and did another 12 hours a day. You know, I grew up in what we would consider, social scientists would say, a dysfunctional family. I grew up in a household, my mama, Georgia, and my mama was hell on wheels. And so I survived being locked out at 17 and being told to go back where you just came from 15 minutes late for my curfew. And so when you grow up in that kind of dysfunction and that kind of adversity and pain and stress, you know, I already had coping skills. And so this is what I did. Back then, we knew that HIV could cause AIDS.
Right.
Now we know that HIV do cause AIDS. And so I set up this invisible divider line the moment I walked out of that Red Cross. Okay, Lord, I remember having this conversation. I got HIV. I can handle that. But don't ever let me get AIDS, because in my mind, AIDS was the death sentence. And 15 years ago, AIDS was a death sentence. And so the way I appropriated it was, as long as I don't have AIDS, I can handle HIV. Until 8 years later, I made a transition to AIDS.
When, after you was diagnosed and you were trying to find, did you come across the person that,
you know, I called ex-boyfriends to, you know, say, hey, I've been diagnosed with HIV. No man was man enough to admit to me he had infected me. And for a long time,
Yeah.
You know, HIV was scary back then, too.
Yes.
You know, you have to understand the context. They kicked little Ryan White out of school up in Indiana.
I remember that, yes.
And I used to call once a year to see who's living, to see who was dead, and trying to figure it out. At some point, I did have a partner die, and I have not disclosed that yet. I'm writing my memoirs, and I am disclosing, finally, who
All
infected
right.
me. But at the end of the day, I made a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I had a choice to have sex or to not have sex. And I had a young man say to me one day, he said, "Miss Thornton, if you knew who infected you, would you forgive him?" And I said, "Sweetheart, it's about me forgiving me."
Right.
Because Ray had a choice. And that's what we have to begin to, you know, people don't want to take ownership and responsibility
that's
for
true.
Their bodies and their lives. And so the best I can do is being yes, someone infected me, but I had a choice not to have sex with that someone.
That's true.
And so here I am. And you know, when you take 15 pills a day, if I coulda, woulda, shoulda, it becomes a bitter pill to swallow.
Literally. You're listening to 89.3 WKKC Baseline. Chris Bass with you. My guest in the studio is Ray Lewis Thornton, the Emmy Award winning AIDS activist and just all around great person. I mean, she really is. She has a great spirit as well. So we move forward to your diagnosis and trying to find or scatter out the spineless bastards who didn't come forward to say that about infecting you. So where does Ray go from that point?
You know, Ray kept it a secret. Which is what I did. My first day, I told three people, other than my, you know, sexual partners who I had to disclose to. I basically kept it a secret. I went on with my life, with my political career. Jesse Jackson ran for president in 88. I went on the campaign trail, infected and working 14-hour days. And I'm talking about getting to a hotel at 2 o'clock in the morning and having a bus call at 5, you know. It's like, whoa, what do you mean? And I just never stopped. When the campaign was over in 88, Reverend said to me, well, what do you want to do now? And I said, I want to go back to school. Because I had quit school to do this politics thing. So I went back to school, graduated from Northeastern, magna cum laude. So I ain't just cute, y'all. I'm smart. Went to graduate school.
The total package, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I can cook like your grandmama.
Oh, so that's great.
It's great. I went to get my master's in political science, and then I made a transition to AIDS. And I was still working. In fact, when I made that transition, I went from 3 pills a day to 23 pills a day. I went from a size 12 to a size 10 to a size 8 to a size 6 to a size 4 in 6 months. And to tell you how deep the secret was, you know, we like skinny folks. People saying, girl, you looking good. I'm like, thank you, baby. Like, I had been working out on Jenny Carrez, some shit. The secret,
only light-skinned
excuse
people, right?
me, was killing. The secret was killing me, okay, quicker than the disease. And so finally, and I became clinically depressed. And, you know, that's a topic that we don't tackle in the African-American community too well. I woke up in the morning crying. I went to bed crying. I went to work crying. That's called depression.
Yes.
I was angry at God. The first time I had ever said, how much pain, Lord? And in my pain and my misery, I began to wonder, could I have joy in the midst of pain? Could I live in the midst of dying? And that's when I really surrendered and let go. And I started to tell. I told one group of friends and another group of friends, and it got easy. I was like, shoot, had I known this, I would have told a long time ago. And I became a new person. I got a new pep in my walk, it was just good. And then that's when God showed me he had something else for me.
Right.
Someone asked me on a fluke to go speak at a high school. Didn't quite want to do it, but I did it. Spoke, bell rang, group of kids left, another group of kids came. And I noticed about that third workshop that there were students still twinkling in and still sitting there. And the teacher explained to me the kids were skipping class to hear me speak over and over again. And the next day when I came to that school, Bowen High School, I'll never forget it, students were lined up along a wall. And a little girl said to me at the end of the day, she's a Hispanic girl. She said, Miss Lewis, I know you say you want a public speaker, but you shouldn't stop because the Lord is using you.
Whoa, okay.
And I couldn't shake it. I woke up thinking about those children. I went to bed thinking about those children. And I remember having a conversation with my boyfriend at the time, who was a principal. And he said to me, why would you want to go out and tell all your business like that? Well, really what he meant was, why would you want to go out and tell all our business like this, my business? But I decided that I would speak. I was working for Joe Gardner. I don't know if any of you Chicagoans remember Commissioner Joe Gardner.
Yes.
He was a good brother from the old days. He was running for mayor.
I remember
that.
And
I was
the
field director on his mayoral campaign. I had lunch with him, and I told him that I was going to quit because I think the Lord wanted me to go out and talk about my life. I quit my job with no speaking engagement set up, with no brochure, and no direction on how to go about another speaking engagement. And the rest has been history.
A lot of people, whether it's before or after a point in their life, either find some form of religion, some form of faith-based. Can you ever imagine your life if you weren't faith-based?
I could not imagine. You know, in the early days, people would say, well, when did you get close to God? I got close to God growing up in a household where I was told I was never going to be nothing. Mm. I got close to God growing up in a household where the men in my house who were supposed to protect me sexually violated me. I'm an adult survivor. That's another thing we don't tackle in the black community.
And we should.
When R. Kelly was on trial, I know y'all going to hate me when I say this. The first thing we said was, them little fast girls, they wanted to get with him. We need to redefine. We need to understand that sexual abuse is about power and control.
Right.
When you grow up in that kind of chaos, you look for something. Drugs, the streets, gangs. I chose church. And I would leave my mama in bed on Sunday morning drunk and go to church. And I would get there at Sunday school and I would stay until they locked the doors because it was my only place of space. And I can see now, having gone to seminary and worked through theology, how my faith started to form and there became a clear understanding from God could keep me to God could use me. And so it's been the foundation of who I am. It's the thing that has sustained me and kept me here. My relationship with God has only gotten greater.
What's your denomination?
I am, interesting. I am Baptist by tradition. Mm-hmm. I have been a Baptist most of my life. Mm-hmm. Reverend Clay Evans is my father in ministry. He licensed me to preach. I love him dearly. That he would even license me, a woman with AIDS, who spent 14 years talking about sex and my sex life. I went to a Presbyterian seminary. I got my Master of Divinity from McCormick Theological Seminary.
All right.
And I'm working on my PhD at a Lutheran seminary. But I'm actually now attending a Presbyterian church.
Okay.
I spent my whole life in the black church. I am standing notice on this selfish kind of faith that we have, this prosperity, this idea of, my relationship with God, it's about how I benefit from God. When ministry should be about how we help people. And so, I made a shift here. And I'm taking a stand on it.
Take us through, you mentioned earlier about when you were diagnosed with HIV. Take us through when you were going through, for example, and maybe before that time, in your timeline, of God, why me, to God, why not me?
I only had that period for about a year.
Okay.
It was that 1 year when I made that clinical transition from HIV to AIDS. Now, understand something. Once you have HIV, you always have HIV. It never goes anywhere. It sticks to your body, to your organs, to your blood like Gorilla Glue, okay?
Right.
But it had destroyed, once it destroyed my immune system and created the disease called AIDS, and with AIDS come the illnesses, the opportunistic infections. That 1 year, because I had lived for 7 years not being sick. I went to the doctor once every 6 months. I was like, I'm straight, okay? And then when all of a sudden my immune system was compromised and my T-cell count was dropping from, because the average T-cell count for a person is like 1,000. An AIDS diagnosis is 200. My T-cell count dropped to 124. It was 108. And I started getting sick. That's when I became angry at God. I was like, Lord, you lost your mind. They say, now where you at? You better show up somewhere.
Right.
And I was in that. But somewhere in that, this person who never surrendered, never wanted to give in to the darkness, started to wonder. And my curiosity of, could I live? Could I be happy? Could I find joy? Those are kind of like theological questions. Took me to prayer. And I stayed in prayer. Because, sometimes when we pray, we look for instantaneous stuff. We look for God to do something right away.
But he's not a microwave oven.
Oh, Jesus, not a microwave. And so sometimes you just got to stay there and wait. And God began to slowly speak to my spirit. Girl, you were a drug baby. My parents were heroin addicts. I weighed 3 pounds and stayed in an incubator for a month. He said to me, you were a drug baby in 1962 before we knew what drug babies were, and you survived it. My grandfather took me when I was a toddler, was raising me, paternal grandfather. He died when I was 6. His wife kept me and raised me. And from a month after my grandfather died, she told me nobody wanted me, and I was lucky she kept me. I was violated. I'm an adult survivor of childhood sexual abuse from the time I was 6 to the time I was 17. And I didn't go crazy. Well, no, I'm crazy. I didn't lose my mind.
Okay, all
right.
Let's
just be clear.
Let's clarify that, right.
I came home 15 minutes late for my curfew. And I have been drug, alcohol, cigarette free my whole life. I was just at a little dance party. Time got by me. And I got home, the double locks was on the door, and I went to the corner, pre-cell phone, y'all. And called Mama, said, Mama, double locks on the door. She said, I know, go back where you came from. I called the next day. She said, come get your stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've been taking care of myself since I was 17. Mm. God said, you never went hungry. You didn't have steak, but you had white potatoes. You know how to boil them, fry them, bake them, and now you can microwave them suckers for y'all talking about y'all hungry out there. And God said, you survived it. Now, based upon, and this was God's response to me, based upon what I have done in your life, based upon how I've kept, we got history, girl, and our history is standing on something. So now, based upon what I have done, don't you think I can handle AIDS? And once I made that one turning point, it's like the Hebrew boy said, even if you don't, I know you can. And once I made that turning point, that even if you don't deliver me, I know you can. That was when the real healing began. And it was a matter of really literally surrendering it. Because, you know, sometimes we become so self-absorbed in the pain,
yes,
in the darkness of it. We can't get past nothing else. We just stay stuck. And God's saying to me, I'm going to get you through this. Hebrew boys. The Hebrew boys made it through the fire, but they never left bondage in Babylon. Mm. And so God lifted them in their misery. God lifted them out of their faithfulness in their pain. They became overseers of their pain. And that's where God has put me and placed me. And I'm real clear on that. Because people say, God can heal you. I said, but the miracle is I've been living with HIV for 26 years and I look doggone Skippy good.
I agree.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And isn't it the journey for people in general, for we talk about a faith-based situation, to go to the darkness to see the light anyway? Wouldn't
it
that be
is.
More crystallized to be in pain and then realize that there's more ahead of you once you submit 100%?
But sometimes we get stuck in that tunnel and we cannot get out. Some people like to be in that ugliness. Some people like stuff. Some people get stuck and like to be there.
Pity parties.
Right. And some people just don't want to go. You know, the best book I ever read was Who Moved My Cheese? About the little mice who had the cheese factory. Then the cheese wasn't there no more. Mm. And then nobody want to go nowhere to go look for no more cheese. And they started to die because they was hungry.
Right.
Come on now. You got to go look for some new cheese.
I agree. My guest in studio is Ray Lewis Thornton. We're taking your phone calls at 773-488-9552. That's 773-488-9552. This is Chris Bass and Bassline on 89.3 WKKC. Please stay close.
The Bridge Network International, Bridging the Gap, Ministries United Together present Welcome to the Bridge, One Body, One God, One Goal. Every Sunday, 9 a.m. at the Ford City AMC Theaters, 7601 South Cicero. The theme, No Fear, will be presented by Reverend Jackie Hood Martin.
If you've got fear, it's not God. When the Spirit of God resides within, and when the Spirit of God is upon you, there is no room or place for fear.
The Bridge is a new style church with upbeat music, encouraging messages, along with activities for all ages. The emphasis is on your individual spiritual journey. The Bridge is committed to bringing individuals and ministries together to make a greater impact in our world. The worship is designed to be a relaxed fit for every age. Come and be a member of the Bridge family every Sunday, 9 a.m. at the Ford City AMC Theaters, 7601 South Cicero. The Bridge Network International, Bridging the Gap, Ministries United Together.
This is Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge, when we see people serving their country and one another. Volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines. And the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
This has been a public service announcement from all of us here at 89.3 WKKC.
Yo, it's your man Tony Scope from 107.5 WGCI.
Have you always had an interest in the media communications industry? Want to acquire the skills to be a disc jockey?
Hey, what's going on? My name is Richard Deal, on-air personality at Soul 106.3 and alumni of Kennedy King College.
How about a TV news announcer?
This is Cheryl Burton from ABC 7.
Sportscaster.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Giangreco from ABC 7.
A TV station manager.
This is Emily Barr, president and general manager of ABC 7 Television.
A traffic or continuity director.
Hi, I'm Michael Capriola, continuity director for Power 92.
Promotions director.
Hello, my name is Ricardo Rodriguez, and I am the promotions coordinator at Power 92 Radio.
How about a production director?
This is Scott Smoke and Sills, an original member of the Hot Mix 5. And you also may know me from V103 and WGCI, where I'm the director of production and imaging.
The new Kennedy King College at 63rd and Halsted offers training in these and other media communications courses. In just 2 short years, you can earn an Associate in Applied Science degree in media communications that will set you up for good-paying jobs and a career in the radio and TV communications industry. Call Kiana Battle at 773-602-5555. 773-602-5555. Registration is going on right now. Your future success starts at the new Kennedy King College.
Hi, I'm Felicia Middlebrooks, morning news anchor at News Radio 780 WBBM, Chicago's only all-news station. And you're listening to 89.3 WKKC, the official radio station of the City Colleges of Chicago.
And welcome back in, 89.3 WKKC, Chris Bass and Bassline. We turn with our guest, Ray Lewis Thornton, the Emmy Award-winning AIDS activist, in 1 second. Letting you know the phone number, don't just sit there and suck free energy. The phone number is 773-488-9552. That's 773-488-9552. Hey, Ray Lewis Thornton does not get out of bed for just anybody. She could have stayed in bed, she could have... him sleep and everything else, you know, it could have been fantastic. So, you know, you better call in and take advantage of the opportunity. In reverse programming order, at 11 o'clock, the Sportsmeister Keith Reed and HB Honey Brown bring you the Sports Connection at 11. At 10, Derek McNeil and Charles Young bring you the Consumer's Eye. Charles, I turn my ass to you. Now, the reason why I say that, Ray, is because we're back at the old building, and I first met Derek McNeil and Charles Young, and he had his back to him while he was talking. I was like, why has brother got his back to him? He literally had his, I'm talking like this, and he had his ass to him, literally. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why I say that, you know. Okay, gotcha. All right. At 9 o'clock, you have Focus Talk with Mr. Dennis Snipe. We'll bring you that. At 8 o'clock, Miss Bernetta Pearson will bring you Health is Wealth, but like I keep saying, there's a campaign that I'm starting. She's a nurse, and she was telling me one time about going to various schools or high schools and talk about safe sex. And I said, okay, do you still do the, you know, condom with the banana thing? And she says, no, we use cucumbers. I said, okay, whatever you want to do, fine. And so I say, you know what, change the name of your show to You and Your Cucumber. Or toss your own salad. It was just one of those type of situations. So I just figured, hey.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, I just said, look, you know, look, you're the one telling me about cucumbers and stuff. So anybody who calls Bernetta 8 o'clock, Get on the campaign to change the name of the show from Health is Wealth to You and Your Cucumber. I'm on the campaign for that. That's what I'm letting you know about that. Okay. All right. Back to our guest, Ray Lewis Thornton. During the break, you had mentioned about the burden of going from being HIV positive to AIDS. So please expound on that.
You know, people tell me often that I make AIDS look easy. You know, wow. Woo, what a heavy statement, loaded statement. Because AIDS is not easy. I take 15 pills a day. I just had an infection that I couldn't shake that required me to get a PICC line, which is an internal IV line, with a port hanging out where I had to administer IV meds at home twice a day, 2 hours a day, myself administer, because they don't pay a nurse to come out and do that. Last spring, I had to take the same medicine, and I had to administer to myself 13 hours a day. And I have to stand up over a stove with a sterile PICC line and try to figure out how to eat, cook my food. And the medicine makes me tired, and there were some days I could barely get out of bed to brush my teeth. And so people don't get it, that it's a rough, it's a financial burden, and it's a catch-22. My medicine low is close to $10,000 a month, and my copay on my medication is $2,500 a month, $2,400. And thanks to Todd Stroger, yes, commissioner, people on Medicare can't get their medicines from county anymore. Oh, you have to get your medicines through Medicare. If you're on Medicare, through Medicare Part D, and Medicare Part D has copay.
Gotcha.
And my copay is $2,400. Mm-hmm. And so I can never work a real job because I never know what my day is going to be. I experience chronic fatigue. So at the end of the day, you cannot live the kind of normal, typical, productive life. Although I look healthy, I sound healthy, and for most people it seems like I have a bundle of energy. I'm just on right now. The off will click off when I get home, and have to shut down and learn to regroup. And then there's the stigma. And that burden is heavy. I've accepted that I have AIDS. And I am the woman with AIDS. And people have accepted me with AIDS because, you know, I'm on covers of magazines and I'm on TV and radio shows. But a few years ago, I went to a tattoo parlor. And I made a conscious decision to patronize the tattoo parlor on the south side of Chicago, instead of the tattoo parlors on the north side. And the person that, you know, took my ID, I picked out the tattoo, took my driver's license, was getting ready to take my money. And just on GP, I thought I should tell him, you know, I have HIV. And he looked me in the face and he said, we don't tattoo people with HIV. Now, he didn't know he had broke a law then.
Apparently not. Right.
And at that point, the political person in me didn't kick in. I was just hurt.
Yes.
And he said, well, let me double check. So he went back, talked to the tattoo artist, and he came back out. He said, I'm sorry. We just don't tattoo people with HIV. And so I got in the car from 83rd and Stony to, by the time I got to Soldier Field, I said to my friend Jason, who was with me, I said, I think they discriminated against me. So we started calling other tattoo parlors on the north side, and I said, I got HIV. They said, come on in. And so when I called Ace Legal Counsel, because you know I called Ace Legal Counsel.
Right.
And they said to me, I didn't even tell them my name. I just told them the scenario.
Right.
And the lawyer said, well, let me check into make sure there are no city laws or something. And when I told her my name, she said, you mean Ray Lewis Thornton, the AIDS activist? I said, yeah. She said, you mean you just got done? And so when she called me back and told me that they had broke human rights, both the city and the state's human rights laws and Americans with Disability Act, she said to me, Ray, you've been a prima donna with AIDS. People have supported you and reached out to you, and you've never had any discrimination. This is the real deal.
Yeah. Now, not to sound stereotypical, but did it crystallize a little bit that you're on the south side trying to get a tattoo and you call up north side tattoo artists and they're okay?
Yeah.
Because it crystallized the fact of the ignorance of not knowing about
the
that?
The ignorance of not knowing. And when we went to the hearings, the owner of the tattoo parlor said, well, you know, this is what they said. We didn't really deny the tattoo. We told her, which they're lying. I won the case.
Congratulations.
Thank you. He said, we told her that if she just waited a little while longer, somebody else would be here that would want a tattoo because the tattoo artist had been in a motor accident and he had cut his arms up and he had children. That's what the boy said. He didn't want to put himself at risk.
Yeah, he got that lie right.
Yeah. I said, so that's like telling black folks at the lunch counter, if you just sit here two more hours, there'll be somebody here wanting to serve Negroes. We just don't have a waiter right here that wants to serve Negroes.
Right.
And so people couldn't understand. Well, and then even friends said to me, well, you do have HIV. And I said, well, then he needs to get in another business.
Thank you. Exactly.
But when we went to court, this is the catch. The tattoo artist, because I was there at the top of the morning.
Okay.
He hadn't seen anyone.
Uh-huh.
They admitted that he stayed for the day. And in the course of that day, he tattooed six more people.
Okay, sir.
So who had HIV, who didn't? And even their consent form said, I agree that I do not have HIV.
True.
And so it was he violated a fundamental right of mine. But okay, let's forget me. Let's think about the young boy who wants to go get tested, or the young girl who wants to go get tested for HIV but are afraid.
Yes.
And then they go to the tattoo parlor in our neighborhood. And when they go in there, they find out that the tattoo parlor doesn't tattoo people with HIV. Are you ever going to go get tested and find out? Who wants to know their HIV status when
exactly.
Ain't nobody? Please, I went and got a new tattoo, y'all, on my foot, and it's sexy.
Oh, okay. Which foot?
See, baby. Ain't it hot?
Oh, that's nice. Flat. I like
that's
that.
That's hot, 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 hot.
I'm telling you.
I got this a month ago, and I walked into the tattoo parlor up on Belmont,
and I picked out my tattoo.
It's a flower, baby.
It's a flower. Okay, great.
I picked out my tattoo, and I said, oh, by the way, I have HIV. They said, not a problem. We use precautions with everybody.
That must make you feel fantastic.
God, that made me feel good. But it's about educating our people.
Yes.
And so I didn't want the little settlement that we got.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't much. It really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a point that
yes.
I had to prove.
And a principle that had to be galvanized, because we just are walking around here stupid.
Stupid.
And stuck on stupid and dangling on dumb.
Stuck.
When it comes to the awareness of HIV and being living with AIDS, like I said before, a lot of people say, okay, they can get it, he can but never me.
Right.
And they have this defense mechanism that they create in their minds that it's those people type of thing.
Right. And the tattoo artist knew the risk factors with me. And if you use latex gloves with everybody...
Mm-hmm.
Then, in fact, back in the day, because tattoo parlors weren't using standard precautions, they were transmitting HIV to people.
Right.
You know, from dirty needles.
Absolutely.
So, hello. But the fact of the matter is that HIV is not airborne. And when the tattoo artist said to me, we went to a hearing and I said, but HIV is not airborne. And the tattoo artist owner said to me, this ain't no hypothetical situation. I wanted to say, you fool.
Right.
What I'm giving you is real information. And so African Americans, we need to move beyond. We are 27 years into HIV. We need to move beyond all of these hypotheticals and deal with what we know. That HIV is not an airborne disease. You can touch people with HIV. You can... HIV, once it lives in my blood, but once the blood hits the surface, HIV dies. You get HIV from unprotected sex.
Yes.
You get HIV from sharing needles, using drugs. That's how you get HIV. Children get HIV from mothers because mothers don't know their HIV status. And had they known their HIV status before they gave birth, if they had known their HIV status in the first trimester, it would be a 3% chance their child would be infected with HIV. We need to stop living in make-believe and living in the reality of this disease, because the make-believe is what's killing us.
You're listening to 89.3 WKKC, Chris Bass and Bassline. My guest in the studio is Emmy Award-winning AIDS activist and just a powerful person that will kick your ass, Ray Lewis Thornton.
Yes.
The phone number is 773-488-9552. That's 773-488-9552. Ray, take us back in the 90s, where it was in October and the Essence magazine first came out, and you graced
December 94.
Thank you. And you grace the cover, and you read the article, and you see yourself on the cover. What went through your mind, and the impact that happened after that?
Okay. The wildest thing about being on the cover of that magazine, it was my picture, mm-hmm. and it said, "Facing AIDS,
right.
young, educated, drug-free, and dying of AIDS," with no other advertisement, which is unheard of in the magazine industry, because those blurbs on the cover is what sells the magazine. And so if someone's not interested in an AIDS story, there has to be some other appeal on the cover. Susan Taylor made a decision, and she, it was not popular within her team, to put me on the cover of the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. I had seen the picture, but I didn't know what the cover was going to say. And when I saw it, "Facing AIDS, young, educated, drug-free, dying of AIDS," the first thing that hit me was, damn, I'm dying from AIDS. And I had some criticism from the AIDS community for that, because they were trying to say, "You're living with AIDS." I said, "Yeah, but at that time, I was dying from AIDS." Then people's reactions, because I cut my hair off right after I did the photo shoot, so I had a really short crop.
I
lost about 10 pounds, so people didn't recognize me, and I'd be in the grocery store, I was in a co-op one day, and I was standing behind two ladies, and they were saying, "Man, you see that woman on the cover with AIDS?" And the other lady said, "No, this girl doesn't have AIDS. It's an article about a girl that has AIDS. It's on the inside of the magazine." And the lady said, "No, they think the woman on the cover got AIDS." And I said, "Yeah, the woman on the cover do have AIDS." And they said, "Well, how you know?" I said, "Because it's me." And I've heard stories like that. I had a guy who runs a post office in a small town. He said, "I put your magazine on the wall in the post office." I said, "Why?" He says, "Because two little black boys came in there, and they was picking up their mama's mail, and one of the guys said, 'Man, she fine.' And the other guy said, 'Man, I think she got AIDS.' And the other guy said, 'No, she ain't got no AIDS.'" And they stood there in that post office and read that story from cover to cover. He said, "And anything that would get two young African-American kids to read an article in a post office was worthy." And so
just to read, period.
Thank you.
Right.
Hello.
Yes.
But it was courageous of me, and it was courageous of Susan Taylor.
That was a bold stroke.
It was a bold to put a woman on the cover of the magazine who was not famous, who was not a supermodel, with AIDS. But what it did was it gave black women a face of AIDS that they had never seen. And that, for me, is a legacy that I'm proud to have.
That really is a strong mantle to take. I mean, not anybody could just take that mantle and
I'm
wear
it
well, it. As you've done, because, you know, that takes a lot of wherewithal, a lot of faith, to step out and just say,
"Ooh,
this is who I am."
And you know, I told my mother, my mama who raised me, I didn't tell her that I had AIDS until 2 weeks before Essence magazine hit the newsstands.
Uh-huh.
Because I grew up in dysfunction, and I tell mama, if I could have been an AIDS activist without telling my mama I had AIDS, let me tell you. And I remember telling somebody, because my mother was a functional illiterate, I was like, "Shoot, my mama can't read. She ain't gonna read Essence magazine." And somebody said, "Girl, but your mama could look at pictures." And so it forced me to disclose to my mother, who's the last person I just close to, but...
Why was your mother the last person?
Oh, God, Let me tell you something. My mama told me I was never going to be shit. And when you grow up living in that kind of ugliness, you work hard to fight it.
I remind this is the radio, so you got to be careful.
I know.
Just checking.
And you know that we have young people who are listening right now who needs to know that they're worthy of something.
Right.
Whose mamas tell them that every day. Who listen to your station.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I got y'all in trouble, but I'm good.
No,
but
let me quantify that
because this is who the audience is.
Right.
And kids need to know that you're better than who your mama say you are. You know, and that's me and who I am. And
So,
you know what? My mama didn't disappoint me. My mama said, see, I told you.
Oh, that's not good.
Because mama was who mama was.
Right.
And mama needed to believe that I was this little fast thing. Now, let me explain to you why mama appropriate, how mama got to me being fast. Because, see, when I told her that her husband was pulling on my breast, she said, see, I'm not going to let you mess up my stuff.
When a woman
stays in a house with a man who pulls on her child's body part, she has to make a decision. She has to rationalize it to herself. And so her rationalization was, if you wasn't fast, he wouldn't want you.
Right. So you replay in your mind your revisionist history and just rejudge the whole thing.
You got to reappropriate it because you got to explain it to yourself of how you stay. Your own low self-esteem lets you stay in a relationship with a man who's pulling on your child's breast and how, why you're not protecting her.
Right.
And so I grew up extremely unprotected and violated. And so I have spent my whole life proving my mama wrong. I mean, I graduated magna cum laude. That's a 3.8 on 4-0 scale.
Please, that's huge.
That's huge. I was summa cum laude in graduate school. So...
But in your mother's mind, you were still this fast girl.
Oh, God.
No matter what you did, no matter what your accomplishments
were. I'll never forget this. When I won my Emmy, someone said to me, did you call your mama? I said, for what? To tell her what? And so I got that, and it took years to get that. And mama never changed. My mother died from cancer in the mouth. And let me tell you something. I took care of her for 2.5 years, and she never got nice. It's only on TV when the mama gets nice.
Okay.
Okay, because people die how they live.
Right.
And so mama was the last person I told, and I had to do it out of respect. But I did it. Women still bring me the Essence in mint condition. I don't even have a mint condition copy of Essence.
Oh, that is fantastic.
And it makes me feel good that to leave that legacy here.
Yes.
Is a good thing. And I've had women say to me, you know, honey, I keep that article as a reminder to keep myself safe. I mean, I've had women tell me, I had a girl tell me that after she read the article, she made a decision to, she had just started a relationship, and she said to the guy, well, we got to start using condoms. And the guy didn't want to use, you know, she hadn't had sex with him. They were getting there. She had the condom discussion with him. He didn't want to. And she said, well, we can't do this. From my article, she said to me, they buried that boy from AIDS. And so for me, the article helped, I understand that it helped to empower black women to rethink HIV/AIDS in a way that spoke to our stories. You know, I wasn't having one-night stands. I was dating men with six-figure incomes. And look, y'all. A Mercedes was required now. Come on now. I wasn't just
well, sir.
Out there.
It was high end.
You know. But it means that some rich boy infected me.
Oh,
you
know, prerequisite.
You know, yeah. And so we think, and we still do in a lot of ways now, but back then we really thought the package would keep us safe.
Yeah.
You know, if I was in a monogamous relationship, if I only dated a certain type of men, that I wouldn't be at risk for HIV.
Right.
One of the things that my story did was it clarified that AIDS has no boundaries of class, of education, and of color or gender. It is what it is. And that's no small thing because, you know, as late as 87, they were still telling women they couldn't get AIDS. In fact, Cosmopolitan did an article in 87 that said women with normal vaginas couldn't get HIV.
You gotta be kidding me.
I swear.
Absolutely incredible. You know, we got a few minutes left. I want to get in the fact of, tell us about the RLT collection and an event you have coming up next Saturday.
Okay.
So the RLT collection first.
What I got going on next Saturday? I got to look at my day
book. Okay.
The RLT collection. You know, I was at my sorority convention. A shout out, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. Ooh! Sorors out there. So I was at convention, and I was looking at all these women's consuming product, and I thought, I wonder what it would take to get women to consume HIV products, because HIV has been the stepchild of product. You know, we got all this pink and breast cancer stuff. So I went back home. I called a girlfriend, Raynanda. I said, Raynanda, can you teach? Because she makes jewelry. I said, could you teach me how to make some jewelry? So she came over. She gave me an hour lesson, and I started making AIDS awareness bracelets.
Okay.
With red crystals and a sterling silver ribbon dangling so that we could begin to wear these AIDS awareness bracelets to challenge stigma and shame and to make them cute. Because, you know,
well, naturally.
You got to wear something cute.
Of course.
But then I got good at it.
Okay.
And so I did what a lot of white girls do quite frequently, is I hung out a shingle. And so I have launched a full line of bracelets. I have my AIDS awareness bracelet, which is going to be five different styles of a red Swarovski crystal bracelet with the sterling silver awareness bracelet. But I'm launching a full line of fashion bracelets. The first collection is Celebrate America. It's red, white, and blue. I design and hand make each bracelet myself. It's going to be a web store and boutiques. I'm already in one boutique in Harlem, Montgomery's.
Okay.
And I'm excited about it. So, you know, September, web store, RLTcollection.com.
That is great. That is fantastic. I'm telling you. People, and you mentioned, I don't know if you got an event coming up. Because I remember we contacted each other and you mentioned about an event coming up that's...
I ain't got nothing going on except the Operation Push Convention. Meet me there.
There you go.
Next weekend, starting Saturday at the Hyatt McCormick. I'm going to be there to support my mentor and friend, Reverend Jackson. That's what hey, you know what?
What's
next
that?
Saturday is National HIV Awareness Day, testing day. Go get tested. Know your HIV status. That is next Saturday, National HIV Testing. The earlier you know your HIV status, the longer you live.
Mm-hmm.
Most African Americans find out their HIV status when they already have full-blown AIDS. 30% of newly diagnosed cases are people infected by people who didn't know they were infected. To not know your HIV status is ridiculous. Go get tested next Saturday. Know your HIV status. It's free. It's confidential. The Core Center, any Chicago Department of Public Health, know your HIV status.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one final question. If you had to have supper with three people, it could be live or dead, who would they be?
Harriet Tubman. Fannie Lou Hamer.
Now, explain who that is.
Fannie Lou Hamer was the civil rights movement in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Martin King came to Mississippi one time and didn't stay long.
Okay.
Fannie Lou Hamer desegregated Mississippi.
Interesting.
And she was most famous for, she was one of the delegates that ran from the Mississippi Freedom Party that went to unseat the Mississippi regulars at the Democratic Convention in 1968. And she made a speech about being tired of being sick and tired.
And one more person.
Jesus.
That's a good note to close on. Ray Lewis Thornton, thank you very much for being here.
Welcome.
And you have an open invitation to come here anytime you want to.
Thank
Call
you.
Me a Chris.
Thank you.
I got to get off my chest. You come here to Baseline
hey,
and do it.
I'll do it.
All
Go
right.
get tested. Know your HIV status. To not know is stupid.
All right. Thank you, Veronica Williams. Thank you, Keith Reed, for doing what you do best. Up next is Know Your Cucumber. With that's what I call it. I'm sorry.
She talking about... diabetes and high blood pressure.
I kid her about that.
She's talking about safe sex, too.
I give her that. I give her that.
y'all don't buy into Chris Madness. Okay.
Brenda Pearson and Health as Well is up next. Have a great weekend. Wait, come over here for a second.
She's going to whip you up.
You going to do what?
I'm with you.
Wait, put the mic on her for a second. Now, you going to whip me? To keep that cucumber away from me. Okay. All right. Have a good week and a good week. We'll do it next week. Thank you very much. Take care.
Peace out. Bye.
One.
Truman College, located at 1145 West Wilson, offers classes in food service sanitation, medical billing.